Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening to another episode of Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views. I am Dr. Karen Lewis, practicing veterinarian in the St. Louis area, and with me is my friend and co-host, Dr. Roger Welton, practicing vet in the Space Coast in Florida. How are you doing today? It's been like 3 weeks since we've done this, so we're sucking. We fully acknowledge our suckage. Just throw that out there.
Wasn't our New Year's resolution to try to do this weekly, I believe?
That was yours. I'm going to just throw you under the bus on this one. I was like, I don't know, and you're like, oh, yeah, we'll do it once a week, and I'm like, mm-hmm. So,
set your goals high.
Here we are.
Yeah, so I just got back from a veterinary conference. I kind of have an excuse, but now we owe our audience, our loyal audience, to be out there more frequently. We're gonna keep trying, right?
Yes, please. Until I leave for vacation in the second part of May, but we won't mention that right now.
Okay. Yeah. So before we get started, I'd like to just talk about our sponsor. Yes, we have another episode sponsored, and once again, it is the Supernatural Pet Sitter, The Magic Thief. So it's a series. It's the first of a series, which is really cool because there's going to be more of them. The author is Diane Mote, and it's basically a Harry Potter meets the pet world. And it's really, really unique and different. It's got a lot of great reviews on Amazon so far. And I would encourage anyone who is an animal fan and a Harry Potter fan to definitely check it out. Have you read it yet, Karen?
No, I'm still lucky to go through my veterinary journals. That's how sad my life is.
Oh, you actually read those?
Well, yeah, because I feel like a bad vet if I don't. I don't know. I have this complex. I never said it was healthy. It's just a complex.
Yeah. Well, they look really nice on my coffee table. That's about it.
When the stack's like 2 feet high, I'm like, if I can get it just down to 1 foot high, then I'm like caught up, you know. Yeah.
So we're talking about tonight a very common problem, a very frustrating problem for both owners and veterinarian alike. And by the way, I'm not just a hair club president, I'm also a client. I have a cat with chronic urinary issues that has led to litter box avoidance. So, Dr. Karen, what say you on this topic?
Well, first, I'd like to thank, who was it that wrote in and talked about this topic to us? We were sitting here going, what are we going to talk about? Then you checked the mail, and that was a great suggestion they gave us. I'll let you look that up. But anyway, thank you for suggesting the topic. And it's super common, super frustrating. I've actually had cats that I have euthanized for this disease, and they're otherwise healthy cats, and they just have really angry bladders. The article I wrote about it is called When Good Cats Have Angry Bladders. And that's kind of what it is in a nutshell. So do you have the email of who sent it?
Still scrolling through it.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm totally.
So do continue to enlighten us. I love what you just said, by the way.
So, anyway, there's a lot of different names for the same disease, and depending on where your veterinarian went to school and in what era, they might call it different things. We were taught FLUTID, which is an acronym. It stands for Feline Lower Urinary Tract Disease. The current hip one with all the millennial vets is FIC, which is Feline Idiopathic Cystitis. Idiopathic means you don't know what causes it, which, God, that's true. And cystitis is inflammation of the bladder. And there's another one called, the other acronym is FUS, which is my personal favorite, FUS, Feline Urologic Syndrome. And I always quip that it's my favorite acronym for this disease because the first two letters are FU, and that's kind of what we feel like the cat is saying to us as we try to fix it. So, anywho.
Yeah, well, like you said, it is frustrating for us veterinarians that, you know, our job is to fix things. And this can be so challenging to fix. By the way, Lauren S. was that lovely person who sent in the idea for this podcast. She's been having some major litter box avoidance issues with her own kitty cat. And gave us the idea for this podcast. So thank you very much, because it's such an important topic. So let's go through the various causes. So you talked about the idiopathic. To elaborate on that a little bit.
Oh, so, and that's the most common, unfortunately, too. So, well, first of all, people come in and they have a cat who's no longer using the litter box. And they say, and I'm sure you hear this, Dr. Roger, too, my cat has a bladder infection. And I say, no, he doesn't. And then,
especially if it's a he, right?
Yes. And most of them are. I don't know the exact statistics, but I think it's over 70% of cats who are affected are your textbook cat with this is your indoor only, slightly overweight, neutered male, middle-aged cat. Okay. That's going to be like, so when they come in and they say they're peeing outside the litter box, I'm like, yuppers. So anyway, it used to be, and there's still, because it's so common, there's so much research going on about this now. When I was in vet school, we really didn't know what caused it, and now we're getting closer. We used to always look to the bladder because these cats, they're peeing blood, they're peeing all over the house, everyone's unhappy, the cat's unhappy, the people are unhappy, everybody's unhappy. And now in the last several years, we've actually learned that it's more of a psychological disease than it is a bladder disease. And I actually have a friend who is a veterinarian. She has this same disease where when she undergoes major stress, she actually will start to pee blood. We always call her the tomcat.
Oh, my God.
She has idiopathic.
I've never heard of a person having idiopathic cystitis.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And she, and the medicine she's on, she's always on all this crazy medicine that we've never heard of. And then she has to go to, like, this certain pharmacy an hour away to find it. It's crazy. But we'll have these, like, crazy stressful days with, we used to work at a place that had horrible management and horrible everything. And when she was done crying, she'd come out and be like, well, time to go pee blood. And we'd be like, okay. So, yeah, so people can get it too. And, but obviously cats, it's more common. So, the psychological part is also probably makes it what makes it frustrating. If it was an infection, we could just say, here's your antibiotic, have a nice day. Yeah. But there's a reason no one goes into kitty cat psychology. Because it's impossible.
Well, I know a few people that did at Washington State University.
And so I want to hear, because Dr. Roger, you have actually experience with your own cat and what you kind of did that helped.
So it was interesting. So what Dr. Karen and I were discussing, there is a North American Veterinary Conference series of lectures put on by Washington State University. They're big into psychology. They're like cutting edge on cognitive dysfunction and separation anxiety and things like that. And also very, very big on the cat psychological side of it. And what they were talking about is these cats are just wired very differently. They may have come from a mom who was living under high stress, a feral mom, and they just come out of the womb basically wired differently, where they're just so fight or flight and experience and process stress in a very different way. So these cats tend to be your idiopathic cystitis cats, but they also tend to be your chronic vomiters. So I have one who is both. He was a cystitis cat. I turned him into an it several years ago. he kept obstructing because of his severe disease. And his disease led him to have pH changes in his urine, which led to crystal formations, which would form these mucus crystal plugs. And he would obstruct, and basically they obstruct three times. You know, you catheterize them for maybe the first couple of times, and you try to get them on a regimen where they're on the right diet, you're doing the right thing psychologically. Get to that in just a second. But and you hope that you can get, you know, avoid surgery. But after the third blockage, I said, you know what, enough is enough. I did a perineal urethrostomy where we basically just remove the penile urethra and give them this little opening that kind of looks like a little vagina. And
so you make your boy pee like a girl.
Yeah.
I'll break it down.
Yeah. So you shorten and widen the urethra so they don't obstruct again now. But it doesn't cure the urinary problem. So, you know, he's still going to have chronic pain and quality of life issues if we don't deal with that. Well, lo and behold, he comes back from surgery. The other two cats in the home decide they don't like him anymore. They start bullying Enrique. Poor Enrique. They're bullying him, and of course that's going to add to his stress. We could not fix it, so we have a really big master bedroom that's connected to a nice large master bath, and basically we moved Enrique into our bedroom, and the other two are not allowed in there. He's got his own litter box, and now he's no longer fed with them. And in the course of doing this, Enrique developed a routine, and in his routine, he's fed at this pretty much the same time every night. He has his own litter box. He has expectations. He knows when we get home, we're going to open the door and he's going to come greet us. It's very regimented, whereas it didn't used to be that way for him. and suddenly he no longer is vomiting. He has very few bouts of urinary flare-ups, and he's a much happier kitty. So in the end, the cat's bullying him turned out to be this sort of blessing. And when I take it back to Washington State University in terms of what they were discussing, that's exactly what they said to do. With these cats, they need routine. They need to have very little change in the home. Change has to happen slowly. They need peace in the home. You have to make it as quiet as possible. They'll feed off your stress. You have to try to calm yourself down. It's remarkable. But there you go. There's a psychological component, case in point. You had brought up feel away earlier, Dr. Karen. Could you elaborate on that a little bit and certainly jump in on comments, anything I just said?
Yeah, we were talking about our go-to, like when you have a client comes in and they say, my cat's peeing blood, he's peeing outside the litter box. We explain it's 99% of the time when these male cats, not an infection, it's sterile. It's just inflammation of the bladder caused by stress. So what do? A lot of my owners don't want to jump to the kitty cat Prozac. They're like, can we do something? It's not a drug. A lot of them end up going to it, and that's fine, and it helps a lot of cats. But the first two things I do, which are not drugs and cannot hurt anything, which most people like, one of them is feel away. It is a pheromone. Basically, they were able to take the chemical that's in a cat's whiskers when they rub against the table or your leg or something to kind of mark it, and put that in a plug-in, almost like a room freshener plug-in, although it has no smell that we can detect. Basically, what this plug-in does is it emits this chemical into the air. Your cat breathes it, and it interacts with their brain and this whatever way magical pheromones work. And it says, you've marked all of this. All of it is yours. You need to be stressed about it.
It's your safe place.
Yes. This is your happy place. And okay, when I had a sales rep come into the clinic I was working at years ago when this came out, I laughed him out the door. I was like, okay, I'm a scientist, and you're telling me about a pheromone that gives your cat a happy place. Really? You know. And he bought me lunch, and I was still mad at him. Just, you know, I can't be bought, for the record. Anyway, but afterwards, when I was done yelling at him, he actually gave me some really good data of very well-designed, very good controlled studies that were performed that actually show that this pheromone is highly effective in 84% of cats within 30 to 60 minutes. So I said, thanks for the free lunch, and I'll take a brochure. So then shut up. So having used it on many of my clients over the years, I will tell you that I'd say more than half of my clients swear by it. I have some clients that are like, that was the biggest waste of $40 I ever did. You know what? The worst thing that happens is you're out $40. You haven't harmed your cat. You haven't had to stress your cat out by giving it pills. You know, it's all very, it's very zen. And when I tell people, I'm like, you plug it in, it can't hurt. They're like, where do I sign up? Yeah. You know,
it does get a little pricey for some folks, but
yeah,
it works. And it comes in a spray as well. And I have a colleague that she got what's called fear-free certification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And so she's got this whole process where they got their little nuzzle buddies, they're called, these little stuffed things that before the kitties come in, they spray them down. They keep them in Ziploc bags because I guess the spray holds for like 8 to 12 hours or something. So they come in and the first thing they do is they walk up to the kitty cat, open its little carrier, pop it in there. It's automatically they're greeted. And she has said, she's reported that actually she's an Illinois doctor, by the way, Dr. Elizabeth Gruen. She's reported that her need to box down some of these fractious cats that you can't even touch, she's gotten through appointments with actually being able to give them physicals. And she has a feline boarding area where she's got the plug in, and it's this whole process of fear free. So no, it's not hokey. It really does work.
And it sounds almost too good to be true, but again, now is this the only thing that you need to do? And this is going to fix your cat's bladder and you live happily ever after. It might take it down a notch, but unfortunately, when you have these cats with these bladder inflammation problems, it's a multifactorial disease, and so you have to attack it from multiple angles too. So the first thing I do is feel away. The second thing I do in the same visit is a prescription diet, and it used to be focused the prescription diet on the bladder. and making their urinary pH low to make it more acidic, having low phosphorus, low magnesium, low calcium, all the things that they want to make these crystals out of. If you don't have a lot of extra of those hanging around, you can't make crystals in your pee. But it was only like the last couple of years that they started adding emotional and psychological ingredients to this food. So now a lot of these foods are calming, anti-stress, whatever you want to call it, and bladder happy foods. Those are the foods that I can get behind. They're prescription only. You have to get them from your vet or have your vet prescribe it. You can buy them online if with a prescription. But they actually have, again, it sounds hokey, but these calming foods have proven ingredients. Tryptophan, milk protein are two big ones that have a clinically proven in controlled studies a calming and anxiety-reducing effect. So that, coupled with the part of the food that makes their bladder happy, coupled with the feel away, you might have a cat who's feeling better.
Yeah, I agree with you. The milk protein is casein, by the way. So
Thank you.
The whole old wives' tale, a little bit of warm milk before bed. Well, it's not. It actually works because you're taking in some casein. So yeah, but they're not gonna. You know, cats are lactose intolerant. It's just the protein. I want to be clear. We're not gonna be having your cat fart you out of his home to fix his bladder. Yes, I agree. That's a great regimen. I love the innovation of these diets that are combining the bladder happy with the stress component. I just want to add that the diets definitely are restricting these crystal building elements, but they also neutralize the pH, which is another really important component of that. I believe the feline happy bladder goal is between 6.2 and 6.4 pH.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be acidic, and the cats that are higher and more basic are the ones that have the trouble. Yeah.
So I want to ask you this, Dr. Karen. I know when it's a male and they're, again, the owner's like, I think he's got an infection. I'm like, no, he doesn't. I do always run the urinalysis. I mean, diagnostics are still very important. I like to run a blood chemistry to make sure we have healthy kidneys. I like to run a complete blood count to, make sure that, there's no white cell elevations or aberrations there. But so I think diagnosis is still very important. But definitely infection is the lowest thing on my mind. What about the girls, though? Because they have that shorter, wider urethra that does enable ascending infection to occur a little bit more commonly than a male. Just like on the human side, how often do you ever hear of a dude having a urinary tract infection?
Exactly. Yeah, but girls do. But in cats with lower urinary tract disease, I read a paper that said of the female cats, 20 to 30% have infections, but still less than 50%. That we'll have.
Yeah.
So, and I am, if people look at me and they're like, okay, I only have so much money, and here we are talking about urinalysis, blood work, all this stuff. They're like, I have so much money. What can we do? If I have to pick one thing, I pick a urine culture, because that will tell me for sure infection or no, because the urinalysis tells us the crystals, which is, and the pH, which don't get me wrong, is hugely important, and I want to do with every single cat that comes in with this. But you have this angry looking urine, but that does not mean you have an infection. That just means you have an angry bladder. So the only way to tell for sure is to basically take the pee in a very sterile way, put it in a petri dish, see what grows. Nothing grows. I can tell you 1,000% your cat does not have an infection, and that gets them off the antibiotic bandwagon.
So until last week, I agreed with that 100%.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Yeah. So, your thinking process, your thought process is, I'm right there with you, but I'm sorry, was right there with you until last week. So, I was just at a conference last week, more of a financial type conference, but we did have a content provider from a lab called Antech, and she's a clinical pathologist. And what she was talking about was actually, that we're actually not very good at growing bacteria. Of the trillion species of bacteria out there, I think we can only grow, and don't quote me on this, but the number was astounding. We can only grow like 0.3% of them. And granted, that percentage is much higher with pathogenic bacteria, but she did say a negative culture does not necessarily mean that there's not an infection. It gives you pretty compelling evidence to that effect, but I wouldn't necessarily hang your hat on it. And if you get a negative culture and you're doing your feel away and you're doing your urinary therapeutic diet, and you're doing all this stuff and it's not working and the culture was negative, try a course of antibiotics, see what happens. She said, "You'd be surprised how often the cat will improve."
So that's interesting, because I just had a conversation with an internal medicine specialist, and so the National Board of Veterinary Internal Medicine Specialists make position statements, and they actually made a position statement kind of opposite that. This is interesting.
Right.
So he was telling me that urine cultures can give false positives. Because dogs, we're talking about dogs, but just, you know, urine cultures in general. He says some dogs normally have some bacteria in their urine, and cats can too. And just because you grow it in culture does not mean it's A, pathogenic, and B, what's causing your problem. And he was like, "You mean you don't read the internal medicine specialist board's position statements every week?" I'm like, "No, I have a life, but thank you. And I'm sorry I was ever born, because you're being kind of mean to me." But it was really interesting, because he was like, "Well, bacteria does not mean infection." So basically no one knows. what do you do with these cultures?
Yeah. I mean, it's a useful tool, but it's a piece of the puzzle in the end, I believe.
Right.
I think it's doing your due diligence, and I'm still going to do it. And I'm still going to follow your, you know, that whole thing you just discussed. I'm going to do exactly that. However, and I'm sure you come across these, I don't see the harm if you're doing feel away, therapeutic diet, you know, all the right stuff. You have a negative culture, but you still have a kitty that's very uncomfortable in the bladder, having waves and episodes of it. I don't see the harm in trying one course of antibiotics.
I have in female cats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Male cats, I'm like, dude, that is one tough sell. Yes, because the urethra is so long and winding, and basically to get from the outside world to the cat's bladder, it's got to freaking be Christopher Columbus and, you know, Marco Polo combined. It's got to be so good. So, but there's other things we can do too. Anyway, the peel away and the food are the first two things. Another product I love, we both do similar concept but different applications. I love Dasaquin or Cosaquin, which is a glucosamine supplement, because we've discovered somehow along the line that cats, not dogs, not people, but cats, the lining of their bladder has actually glucosamine-type molecules on it. And so by giving a glucosamine supplement, which we usually think of joints when you think glucosamine, it can actually help strengthen the lining of the cat's bladder. So I like the flavored powders you sprinkle on the food. Very non-stressful, very non-confrontational. Dr. Roger, you said you like a different one, and I was like, that's actually a really good idea. It's a lot more expensive, though.
Yeah. Well, there's a generic of it now. So Adequan.
Mm-hmm.
It's a glycosaminoglycan, which the beneficial molecule within glucosamine is glycosaminoglycan. So this is just a purified, injectable version of it. But there is a generic of it that lowers the cost considerably called ChondroProtec. And it's the same.
It's just for horses. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I'll actually, if the owners are willing to do it, teach them how to give the injections and just sell them the bottle, you know. So
do you find the stress of the injections and the owner's stress about the injections helps increase the cat's stress, or no? Well, most cats take injections and don't care.
They certainly take shots better than they take pills, you know.
Oh, God, yes.
The flavored powder is great, and cats are so finicky, though. You know, it's like what one cat thinks is caviar is delicious, the next cat thinks is a toxic poison. You know, if you have a 60% efficacy in a diet that 60% of cats will eat, that's wonderful. That's a successful diet. So yeah, that's your one limitation with the sprinkling, whereas the I believe that the Adequan is going to be finickiness proof. But cost-wise, I think Cosquin is going to be great. Yeah, really good idea.
So those are the kind of nutraceutical supplementing kind of things we can do. There are true drugs we can give. I've touched on it before, kitty cat Prozac. There's a lot of different anti-anxiety drugs, amitriptyline, fluoxetine, paroxetine. These are all, it kind of depends on your vet's personal experience with the drug. I tend to use the couple drugs over and over just because I'm comfortable with them. I know how to use them. I know how to dose them. You know, giving your cat a pill when you're trying to treat its anxiety is a little bit counterproductive, as you can imagine. So they make these in transdermals. Do you use transdermals a lot?
That's going to be my go-to for that.
Okay,
reason.
Yeah. What is a transdermal? I'll let you kind of explain what that is.
Well, it just soaks through the skin.
Right.
It's a little tiny. It's an ointment, tiny amount of ointment. You rub it on the inside of the ear, and it absorbs in the skin. You got to wear this little finger condom, though, because you don't want to be getting a dose of it yourself. but
or maybe you do.
Right. So what do you like, amitriptyline? Is that your...
You know what? I'm kind of flaky. I'll do amitriptyline for a while, but then I'll do Prozac for a while, and I'll kind of keep going back and forth because I'll read one study that says Prozac's the bomb, and I'm like, oh, I'll do Prozac, everybody. And then a couple years later, when I get down in that stack of journals I never get to read, then I'll be like, oh, amitriptyline is saving lives. So, you know, I'm flaky. This comes as no shock to my listeners, I'm sure. But...
Well, it's, I mean, it all has similar efficacy. I think
it's all the same stuff.
It's very similar. And there's one that a friend of mine swears by, and that's all she'll use, is buspirone.
Oh, I've used that once.
Yeah. And how'd it go for you?
I forgot. Okay. So apparently, I don't know.
Maybe the kitty's still on it. So. I've never used it because I, you know what? I change very slowly. So like I've been using amitriptyline since it was under the brand name Elevil, you know?
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I always say why fix what's not broken? The price is good. It's well tolerated. Prozac I like more for dogs and their little anxiety problems, but I think it's just preference. I can't tell you that amitriptyline is going to work any better than fluoxetine, which is generic Prozac. It's just, you know, it's just habit, you know, at this point.
And I think there's individual variation. Like if I'm doing one and people say they don't like it, the cat's sleepy, or they don't think it's doing anything, if they've done it for a few months, I'll try the other one.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Agreed. Yeah.
Because every different body absorbs drugs differently, processes them differently. Who knows? So I try to keep an open mind. Something else I do is, address in boys specifically, when you have this really angry bladder, the urethra can kind of spasm and it kind of feels like they have to pee when they don't. And so we'll actually give an antispasmodic for the urethra to me. And so that can come. So now we have two creams we're putting on the ear to get absorbed to the skin because again, we can't kill the cat. So prazosin is my drug of choice for that. Is it what you go to too?
Is that a trade name or a generic?
It's generic.
So now
Roger's getting very tired, by the way. He's rubbing his eyes and looking sleepy, so give him a mulligan.
Well, I had an evening shift that was busier than expected. Now phenoxybenzamine. I could not think of it, but yeah, phenoxybenzamine is what I use. So
okay, and honestly, and I'll use that sometimes too. Again, flaky vet here. no allegiance to anything. But anyway, so I have cats I've done all of these things with. Other things you can do are increase water consumption. Get a water fountain. Some people say distilled water. You know, because cats are not by nature big water drinkers, and we want to get their urine kind of watery so it's less caustic on that bladder. So those are things you can do too. funny story. Relevant, but more for entertainment purposes. I was working in a clinic, and I walk into the exam room, and my tech warned me before I walked in. She was like, the smell of these people was going to knock you over. I was like, okay, you get that. It was a combination of dirt, BO, and cigarette smoke. Okay. So there's three people. I walk in the room. They're super nice. You know, they've got this cat and this dog. They just went the rabies, nothing else. And we're low on teeth, and that's okay. And, you know, I just kind of talked to them and got in, got out. And the cat had been having some urinary troubles. And I was just kind of giving them, seeing what they wanted to afford and what we could do. And praying to God someone would open the window so I could breathe through my nose. And anyway, and so, you know, these people living this kind of lifestyle that I'm not all that familiar with. But, and anyway, throughout the course of the conversation, I was mentioning different options. And I mentioned distilled water. And the lady shot up and she said, oh. Well, of course, we don't drink city water. We all drink purified water.
Wow.
And when I picked my jaw up off the floor, I was like, oh, so that's the battle you've chosen.
Right. Nothing to say. Yeah. Cigarettes, no problem.
We don't shower either, brush our teeth, but oh, well, yeah. So
that's
anyway.
That's awesome. That's really funny. one of the things... I should have brought this up in the beginning of the episode because it's about litter box avoidance really to begin with. Why do they avoid the litter box?
Oh,
what causes them to do it? So they have an angry bladder, but why do they say, I'm not using the litter box because I have an angry bladder?
Yeah, well, it's because they're cats and they're in the litter box. They pee. It burns.
Yep.
So they're like, clearly this is the litter box's fault. Clearly. Right. Something here bit me. Something here got me. It wouldn't be me. So basically what these cats do is they go on a quest for a place they can pee where it won't burn. So they're like, usually the bathroom rug is always a hit, you know? And like, well, you know, it burns there too. Well, geez, I guess I'll try the laundry or the, you know, mom's bed or something. And so when people have this cat who's peeing all over the house in various places, that is your textbook urinary tract disease cat. Where a cat who has one favorite spot they just like to pee at, probably a healthy cat, healthy bladder, who just found a spot that's way fun to pee in.
Yep.
So
yeah,
there's a difference there.
That was a perfect explanation. I mean, I can't even, there's nothing to add. It's so spot on.
I am to please.
And I also lived it too with Enrique, and he chose the middle of my bed, by the way. That was one of his spots. But I'm thankful he did that because, and he was looking at me as he did it. And I go, what are you doing? And then I saw some blood there. And then I felt his bladder, and he had basically just squeezed out a little bit because he was completely obstructed. It was 11 o'clock. I had run him down to my clinic, and with my wife, thank goodness she's a vet tech, flew down, you know, drove down there and, you know, sedated him and unblocked him and all that. But yeah, right in the middle of my bed, staring at me. I know it's sad. You know, it's really sad for these cats because on one hand, it's funny. You're like, it burns when I pee. Well, it's got to be the litter box. That's funny. But at the same time, it's sad true. That these kitties are so desperate to find a place to pee where it's not going to hurt. It's very sad.
And I want to touch on the fact that he was looking at you because he was looking at you saying, help me.
Yeah.
Basically. And some people think that these cats are doing it for spite
right.
or for revenge.
Right.
And I think we're giving cats way too much credit to think that they're, you know, at every board certified behavior specialist will tell you there's no such thing as revenge. And or grudges being held or anything in these animals. They're peeing outside the litter box for a different reason. Usually for the reason I discussed, but there could be other reasons too. I am convinced, I think some cats pee, but it's just attention seeking because there's something else going on with them medically. And they're like, I don't feel good. I'm just going to pee here. You know, because a lot of these cats all diagnose like hyperthyroid or something completely not really related to the bladder, but yet we fix it and the peeing out of the litter box stops. So
that's a great example.
It's kind of a
diabetes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great example.
So don't ever punish your cat for going outside the litter box, because here we are talking about how this disease is stress-based
right.
and punishment is generally viewed as inappropriate and ineffective by most specialists. But talk about increasing a cat's stress and being counterproductive.
Right.
You know, not helpful. So
no, not in the least. And it's, And again, that's even more sad, you know, to be adding to the stress of this kitty that's, you know, the sole cause for the disease. Not the sole cause, but a very important reason it's happening in the first place. And so, you know, back to the chronic vomiters, when you, you know, go through all these measures, have you come across ones that are chronic vomiters concurrently?
I'm trying to think. I mean, they don't have their vomiting episodes. I mean, I have a lot of chronic vomiters. I'm trying to think if they're also bladder cats, because the episodes don't seem to be synchronized.
Yeah. No, they don't seem to be, but they'll like when they're not in the midst of a flare of the urine, the bladder, they'll vomit at other times.
They'll be pukers. Yeah.
They're pukers. Yeah. And that's another thing. It's a whole other topic. I don't want a tangent here. And that's a great episode topic, by the way.
One of us please write this down, because every time we're like, what are we going to talk about? We're always like, we had a great topic. I forgot what it was.
Yeah, I'm going to write it down right now.
You guys should hear our pre-show conversations. That's pretty much how they all go.
But
so.
Yeah, don't ever label your cat just a puker, because according to the, what is that feline? The American Board of
Association
Feline Practitioners.
Yeah,
whatever. Yeah. According to them, and all the research, and they got some pretty smart people driving that research, vomiting more than twice a month is abnormal.
Yep.
So you got these people coming in saying, oh yeah, you know, no health problems, just, you know, your typical pukes once a week or twice a week. And I'm like, well, that's a problem.
That's a lot of puke. Yeah.
It's a lot of puke. And lots of times it's undigested food, but whole other topic, tangent. One last little comment on the next episode. Okay. Or maybe in a future episode. Hey, little teaser there. Keep listening. what my associate doctor swears by this, He instructs the owners to soup down the food, soup down the food, soup down the food, soup down the food, to get it
if
as wet and soupy. To get it as liquidy as a kitty will tolerate, and to encourage them to drink more. Mm-hmm.
And also canned food as opposed to dry for the same reason.
Right.
You know.
Now, a lot of vets subscribe to this. My feeling on that, though, is if they take in more water by virtue of souping up the food or eating canned food, aren't they just going to drink less water? I mean, a cat's just going to be – they're just going to drink as much as they need.
Well, I think they drink so little water anyway, you've pretty much got nothing to lose. So,
yeah,
because they're such, I mean, they're like desert species. They're not water drinkers. And so you're getting more water in them with the canned food than they would by drinking.
Yeah.
So that's the theory. But yeah, and I usually say canned food as much as possible for these cats because it is a sneaky way to get water in them if the fountain isn't working or everything else you're trying. And I will tell you a story, a real quick little story. I'm in a story mood today. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's been too long since we did this. So anyway,
our little prep talk that we have before each episode, you had a story then too.
Oh, I know.
I like your stories.
I do.
Do continue.
Yeah. So I had a cat. It was a patient of mine who was constantly beat up by the other cat. They separated them. They tried everything. They didn't live in a very big house. They didn't have two stories. You could have one cat in each story. Nothing was easy. We did everything for this cat's bladder. I mean, he would always just pee blood and be uncomfortable. I mean, I'm talking, you know, all the stuff we've talked about, we did various foods, various anti-anxiety medications, you name it, we did it. Even when they were desperate and they're like, we're going to put this cat to sleep because this cat is so miserable. Will you biopsy his bladder? And I was like, well, I can. I'm not really sure it's going to tell us anything, but in the name of being thorough, yes, maybe there is some weird, you know. So I actually biopsy this cat's bladder surgically and, you know, cut off a chunk, sent it to the lab, it comes back, chronic inflammation. Well, thanks. I could have told you that before they put the cat through this.
Right.
So, you know, and I'm talking to specialists all over the country. I'm picking everybody's brain in the world who will listen to me about this cat. And everybody's like, nah, you've tried everything. You did a great job. I don't know. Finally, I found, and then everybody has a line that they have to draw. And where these poor people drew the line was I found a lady in Colorado who would come out and feng shui their house to accommodate the cat's emotional and spiritual needs.
Wow.
That's when they put the cat to sleep. They were like, we've done a lot. I said, oh, you guys have, they went above and beyond what any cat owner would do. I mean, this cat was just, I mean, he would just try to pee all the time. Imagine him feeling like he had to pee all the time. I can't even imagine how miserable that is. Yeah. Oh my God. And they were like, you know what? We don't think we want to do that. And I was like, I do not judge you.
Right.
At all.
Yeah, and it's a quality of life issue. You know, it's, I don't know. I wouldn't mind getting my house feng shui'd though. I mean, if it doesn't work out for the cat, I still got a feng shui'd house, right?
Well, right. But I think that, they had to like pay to fly her in from Colorado. And yeah, I was like, the $1,000 bladder biopsy was bad enough, you know? So yeah. But anyway, but just to show, I mean, basically, this and we opened this show with how frustrating this disease is for vets, and it's cases like this that are, because I did everything right. I did everything by the book. The owners did everything right. I mean, my God, they were going to freaking feng shui their house. I mean, seriously. They actually considered it for a while. I mean, yeah. I was like, oh, my God, wow. Sometimes there just is no cure. You can give the body everything it needs or wants, but it's kind of got to meet you halfway, and some of these cats psyches and bladders just don't.
Yeah.
It's rare to have that big of an abysmal failure, but thank God it's rare, but it still sucks nonetheless.
Yeah. So I think we covered pretty much every angle of this. Is there anything else that we're missing here in the wonderful world of feline urinary tract issues?
We talked about keeping it short because we're both tired and then we both got going and talked too long. So
you know
what else is new?
There, I knew that wasn't going to stick.
I know. Whatever. We're like, let's not talk much.
Yeah. Good luck. Well, it's wonderful to reconnect with you and you, the audience. I'm sorry. When are you going away on vacation? We got to get another podcast in before.
Oh yeah. We'll do a couple more first half of May before I head to the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
So
is that a deal?
Yes.
Okay. Grand Canyon. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. I'm actually very excited.
You should be. Well, thank you very much for listening, everybody. I hope you learned a little bit more about cat pee tonight.
Yay, cat pee.
Good night.